Hello and welcome to this week's Tales of the Resistance. This is a podcast all about antimicrobial resistance and how this growing health crisis can affect our daily lives. I'm Mara Zelt. I am the project manager with the I Am Responsible Project, one of the regular hosts of this series. And I'm going to be joined today in our discussion by Noelle Atienomwere.
I am Noelle, and I am a recent PhD graduate from the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, where I studied environmental engineering.
Yes, and Amber Patterson.
Hi, I'm Amber Patterson. I'm the multimedia graphics designer for the Schmidt Lab, and I'm part of the I Am Responsible team.
So today we're going to be continuing our discussion of quarantine life from COVID or from cholera to COVID-19 by Dr. Kari Nixon. So the next part of our discussion is on not chapter six, but on the interlude, the anti-chapter, which is called Let's Talk About Death, Baby. So in this section, Dr. Nixon is taking a little bit of a break from discussion of infectious disease specifically, and how, and then moves it more broadly to how we respond to death, how we respond to our own possibility of demise or the deaths of people that we love, in terms of the actions that we take on a daily basis, but maybe also in just how we're thinking and if that's healthy or not. And I don't want to get like make anyone uncomfortable if they don't want to share, but how comfortable are you with death? Are you worried about it? Are you, maybe for yourself first, because I'm sure that it's a whole other can of worms when it's somebody, you know, that you're close to thinking about their death.
Yeah, I think about death often. I've come to terms with it. Eventually came to terms with it, say, 3 years ago.
So I just found it fascinating because I myself am someone that struggles with the concept of death, and I certainly haven't made peace with it, especially the thought of my loved ones dying and wanting to, you know, like I am very risk averse because of the fact that I want to live a safe life, and I feel like we're all going to live till we're 90 or 90 plus years. And I just thought that this was kind of, this perspective was an eye opener because we aren't really exposed to death like they would have been in the Victorian era. And so when someone dies, it's a shock. It's always a shock. And I found almost that I have a morbid curiosity with finding out how people have died, because it's almost like if I know, then I can prevent it from happening to myself. I would say for myself, I am a lot more comfortable with the concept. That's not to say that I wouldn't fight for my life or, you know, that I'm ready to go, but I've definitely think that it doesn't paralyze me like the fear of losing someone I love does. And so I really struggle with that. And I find to admit that it's something I'm preoccupied with and think about quite often is losing my loved ones, especially since COVID-19 and knowing people who have lost their loved ones, you know, where 2 years ago they wouldn't have considered it. And now this pandemic has come about and it's now their reality.
Well, I guess I'm the odd man out, though, because I gotta say, in some senses, I have always thought I wouldn't live to be very old. And so maybe that was me thinking about death. But I don't think that I had really thought about it that much in terms of, am I ready to go? Am I ready for other people around me to go? And for myself, I am of two minds, I think. In one sense, like you said, I'm more or less ready. Although I definitely, my first thought when I was thinking about this was all about organization. Like, I tend to see myself as generally helpful to other people, and I want to be a positive influence on the world. But then I was thinking, what is the last sort of action basically that I would take in my life if I died tomorrow, in terms of what the impact would be on the people around me, would be the entire mess of all of all of my sort of records and effects. And I'm just like, would my lasting legacy just be that it was so much work for everyone else? You know, that kind of was like a wake-up call. It's like, oh no, I gotta get my lab notes in order. I gotta get my insurance papers in order so that, you know, if I drop dead tomorrow, my sisters would know how to get some money, or, you know, how to pay the mortgage, and the people that I worked with would know where anything in the lab was. That was one of my thoughts, was like, I'm not ready to go because my paperwork is terrible. And then the other thing was, on the other hand, though, even though I would generally say, like, yeah, I think I've, not to say that I can live with, I've lived without regrets, but I generally think, in, like, in the balance, I've done more good than harm. And so in that sense, I can go whenever. But I am a sort of like so curious about things that, because we're working on things like antimicrobial resistance and sustainable agriculture and stuff, and I just want to know, like, how did it turn out? did we solve it as like humans? Obviously, someday all humanity will be destroyed by the, like, or at least the Earth will be destroyed by the, if the sun, if nothing else. So it's not like we can, there's any end to the future problems that we're going to be combating. But, you know, just out of curiosity, I'd like to see how we were able to navigate these.
This chapter really stood out for me. What was the idea of that we've kind of lost our connection to death was like the rituals and practices when someone dies. And Nixon spoke about, in Victorian era, they kept the body in the house for a week and the clock kind of stopped, and they had signifiers to society that someone had died, whether it was black clothing for the women or a black armband for the men. I thought that was really beautiful. And she makes a remark about how different things might be if we could, without speaking it, say to the world, we've just lost someone and we're in deep pain and we're grieving. And some of those rituals that were described, I think, would also be very therapeutic. And now she talks about the sanitization of death. I find it interesting that even since I was a little younger and going to funerals and seeing the body, that as an adult, I have not gone to a funeral where the body was visible. It's always been closed casket or cremation. And I find that interesting because that makes it even, I think, it removes you even that much further from the fact that this person has died, not being able to see their body. I think, at least personally for me, it's the closure that I need. And for instance, my grandmother just recently passed away, and there was no viewing of the body, and I didn't get to see her one last time. And I think that just makes death seem, it's easier to deny it, if that makes sense. Like, that person's just gone. They're just wiped away. You know, they're just no longer with you. And that's kind of hard to digest. And
I thought for me as well, the most powerful parts of this chapter were about grief. Because there, I think it is certainly clear to me in every time that I have encountered or been, you know, you're asked, how do I want to say this? Like, when someone you know is experiencing grief, or you're experiencing grief, it's very evident to me that we have lost our language about this, that we don't really have good, I guess, want to make it trite and just say social skills, but it's universal. It's a universal experience that we are just not able to handle. anymore. And it's sort of mind-boggling if you think about it in those terms. But like you were describing, Amber, it may be because we have so removed all of these indicators of grief that in our lives that are able to sort of express that is what you're experiencing, that now people sort of go through their lives assuming that there is no grief in the world, unless someone is like crying or, you know, having an emotional breakdown on a movie or something. But grief looks so, I mean, it's experienced on a day-to-day basis. And so it has, and it's sort of the overwhelming feeling, you know, you are happy, you are sad, you are working, you are busy, you know, there's all range of emotions that you may have on a day-to-day basis, but grief is sort of overarching. And so like, we don't have a very good, I don't know, way to identify it or describe it, and what a loss that is for our society. I think that was, for me, a very powerful part of this chapter, for sure.
Honestly, for me, this chapter was quite hard to read, though, because everything just touched close to home. And it also kind of reminded me of this show on Netflix. It's called The Midnight Gospel, which basically goes about everything that Dr. Nixon talks about in this chapter, sanitizing death, not being able to mourn like people used to. Even though in the Victorian era, there was a whole sort of business on its own. But yeah, this was quite a difficult chapter to read. I probably skimmed through it rather than read it to its entirety.
I'm not sure we need to say much more about it.
Yeah, I think we've covered our bases. Okay, so that will do it for today. We'll look forward to next week when we'll be picking up with chapter 6 on desperate remedies and dangerous cures throughout history.
Chapter is a lot of fun. She bowls us over with death, and then she
brings it back up. It is a little bit more humorous in hindsight, although not for the people living with it, for sure.
So
we'll just thank our listener and thank you both for joining today on the podcast.
Thank you.
I don't know that I would say that I came away with it with great fear for everyone that I love or worried about their death, but just, I don't know how to really get into this without crying again, and I don't want to cry on the podcast, so at least not on this one. I think this is too early in the series to get this.